Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have been talking about this day for a very long time, and now here it is. Welcome to the new tomorrow. Welcome to martial law. Let me begin our sort of rambling and yet somewhat personal and important discussion with a few quotes from a book that I purchased years ago called Battlefield America by John W. Whitehead. On page number 83, Whitehead writes, "How do you persuade a nation of relatively freedom-loving individuals to march in lockstep with a police state?" "You start," he answers, "by convincing them that they're in danger, and only the government can protect them. Keep them keyed up with constant danger alerts and the occasional terrorist incident, whether real or staged. Distract them with wall-to-wall news coverage about sinking ships, disappearing planes, and pseudo-celebrities spouting racist diatribes. That is how you persuade a nation of relatively freedom-loving individuals to follow the police state." Let me read to you another very profound quote on page number 37 of the same book. "Fascism, like most political shifts in history, does not scream, 'I'm here.' Its ascension is very subtle and incremental. Indeed, fascism does not seek to overthrow the major institutions of society, such as businesses and commercial establishments, family, religious centers, and civic traditions. It seeks to control them and the social order by celebrating it, lifting it up, and ultimately centralizing it. Thus, the lure of fascism is the plan to society, and by preserving that which was politically valued by the masses, fascism presents the illusion that it does not somehow destroy democratic traditions, but rather provides a new and more scientific way of managing national life." Let me read to you one more, if I may, from early parts in the book on page number 14. Field Marshal Hermann Goering remarked during the Nuremberg trials, the famous Nazi general, quote, "It is always a simple matter to drag people along, whether it is a democracy or a fascist dictatorship or a parliament or a communist dictatorship. Voice or no voice, the people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. This is easy. All you have to do is tell them they are being attacked, and denounce the pacifist for lack of patriotism and exposing the country to danger. It works the same in every country." It is truly amazing, I think, how rapidly and how deeply and how profoundly our rights have been eroded. And yet, it is hard. It is very hard to articulate what freedom-loving people are feeling. Or maybe I should say it this way. It is hard for visionaries to articulate what they are feeling, what they are seeing. Now, to be sure and to be honest with you, if the world were made up of visionaries, it would be a sucky place to live. I don't mean to lift the visionary and by that myself above anyone else. I don't mean that at all. That is hubris. It's prideful and a sort of a bland passive aggression. I'm not saying that at all. But there are those who tend not to see what is in front of them, but down the road. Now, most of the times they're a pain in the butt, because most of life is about seeing what is in front of you. But occasionally, you have to look, you have to anticipate. I remember my dad, when I was learning to drive, we had had a near miss early on, and I remember him asking me, "What were you looking at?" And I told him, I said, "Well, I was basically looking at the front of the car in front of me. And he said, no, son, you've got to look further down the road. You've got to be looking at the cars ahead and behind and be anticipating. A defensive driver is a driver that anticipates and sees beyond the immediate. And I feel that that is such an apropos statement for where we are now. Of course, there is the COVID-19 virus, the Wuhan virus, but I think there is this lack of sight, of vision. I don't even know that there's necessarily anything that can be done about it at this point, but I feel as if there is something missing, something dangerous, more dangerous, I think, than our health. Yes, I believe in my heart that we should be more afraid of losing our freedom than we are of losing our health. We should be more afraid of the reach and spread and the contagion of a government that can at any time, under any circumstances, based upon its declaration of what is dangerous to the society, take away long-held rights that go much further back than just our simple Constitution. If we believe our Constitution, they are rights given to us by God. And therefore, should these rights need to be suspended or infringed upon in any way, at the very least, should there not be, from the president to the governors to the local officials, some relief sought and offered to the houses of worship, to the individual people who have done nothing wrong, and yet find themselves, all of a sudden, under ipso facto martial law? I don't think it's just myself. Ron Paul has a tremendous article that was written March 16th, 2020. Ron Paul, in his weekly column, states, governments love crisis because when the people are fearful, they are more willing to give up freedoms for promises that the government will take care of them. After 9/11, for example, Americans accepted the near total destruction of their civil liberties in the Patriot Act's hollow promises of security. And may I say that that Patriot Act is still enacted. Not only that, but we have been in war for 20 years. Paul goes on to state, it is ironic to see the same Democrats who tried to impeach President Trump last month for abuse of power, demanding that the administration grab more power and authority in the name of fighting a virus that thus far has killed less than 100 Americans. Now, at the time, it has killed now, I think, slightly over 200 Americans, but that's still less than drug overdose, that's still less than alcohol. There seems to be no pandemic, no fear of the pandemic of alcoholism killing thousands and thousands and thousands of people every year. Paul goes on to state, declaring a pandemic emergency on Friday, President Trump now claims the power to quarantine individuals suspected of being infected by the virus and, as Politico writes, stop and seize any plane, train, or automobile to stymie the spread of contagious disease. He can even call out the military to cordon off a U.S. city or state. State and local authorities love panic as well. The mayor of Champaign, Illinois, signed an executive order declaring the power to ban the sale of guns and alcohol and cut off gas, water, or electricity to any citizen. The governor of Ohio just essentially closed his entire state. The chief fearmonger of the Trump administration is without a doubt Anthony Fauci, head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the National Institute of Health. Fauci is all over the media, serving up outright falsehood to stir up even more panic. He testified to Congress that the death rate for the coronavirus is 10 times that of the seasonal flu, a claim without any scientific basis. Now, let me pause here to say that much, if not all, of our absolute fear-mongering comes from basically three key areas. And I'll start from the least to the worst. One is Iran. And the reason that we're so fearful of Iran is because we're getting clear and detailed information coming out of that country, right? Wrong. Of course, there are the satellite pictures where they said they were having mass graves dug. That couldn't be irrigation or pipe trenches or anything else. It, of course, had to be mass graves because we knew that. Secondly, Italy with a high death rate. Well, Italy's age population is extremely high. And secondly, Italy is a first world country with a third world medical program. And lastly, China. And the last time I looked around here in the United States of America, nobody was eating bat head in a pile of their own feces, which is pretty spot on definition of what it's like to live in the Wuhan market and area. So I'm not belittling their deaths, but I'm saying to compare the United States of America, our medical system, our hygiene, our infrastructure to that of Iran, Italy, and China is absolutely maddening. Well, Dr. Fauci claimed that it was 10 times worse than the seasonal flu. He's backed that down now to 7. Paul goes on to state, on Face the Nation, Fauci did his best to further damage an already tanking economy by stating, right now, personally, myself, I wouldn't go to a restaurant. He has pushed for the closing of the entire country down for 14 days. Over what? Paul asks, which I think is what we're all asking. A virus that has thus far killed just over 5,000, wait for it, worldwide. And at the writing of this article, he said less than 100 in the United States. It is now 200, over 200. But don't we all know by now that the vast majority of those people that died had underlying circumstances? The other day I had a friend of mine who's a big soccer fan was watching a news article, and it said soccer coach died, and he was shocked, only to read down through the middle of the article that the soccer coach was in his 70s and had lymphoma and died from complications of COVID-19 while being in his 70s having lymphoma. Paul goes on to state, by contrast, tuberculosis, an old disease not much discussed these days, killed nearly 1.6 million people in 2017. Where is the panic over this? If anything, what people like Fauci and other fearmongers are demanding will likely make the disease worse. The martial law they dream about will leave people hunkered down inside their homes instead of going outdoors or to the beach where the sunshine and fresh air would help boost immunity. That's fascinating to me. Here in Manatee County, Hillsborough County, Clearwater, they close the beaches. Well, okay, if you go back and look at the Spanish flu, they were sticking them out in the sun. Doesn't make sense. The panic produced by these fearmongers will likely help spread the disease as massive crowds rush into Walmart and Costco for the last roll of toilet paper. The madness over the coronavirus is not limited to politicians and the medical community. The head of the neoconservative Atlantic Council, and let's remember what the neocons have done to us the last 20 years. The head of the neoconservative Atlantic Council wrote an editorial this week urging NATO to pass an Article 5 declaration of war against COVID-19. Are you kidding me? Are they going to send in tanks, Paul asks, and drones to wipe out these microscopic enemies? People should ask themselves whether this coronavirus pandemic could be a big hoax, with the actual danger of the disease massively exaggerated by those who seek to profit financially or politically from the ensuing panic. That is not to say the disease is harmless. Without question, people will die from coronavirus. Those in vulnerable categories should take precautions to limit their risk of exposure, but we have seen this movie before. Government overhypes a threat as an excuse to grab more of our freedoms. When the threat is over, however, they will never give us our freedoms back. That, ladies and gentlemen, is not your friendly neighborhood kook at the Soul Trap. That is Ron Paul. But I think he speaks for many of us when we call this whole thing into question. Could you ever have imagined a day in which we literally are watching martial law unfold before us? There have been past reaches of the government. There's no doubt about that. Overreaches of the government. The Spanish flu, other instances like that. Even here in Florida, there was a town called Bartow that was known as a shotgun town during the yellow fever outbreak. They clamped things down. But the problem with looking back to the past, saying, well, we've had these kind of things before, is that A, it doesn't make it right. You don't get to say, well, because there's always been slavery, we should keep slavery. No, that's a fallacy. And because there have been governmental overreaches in the past does not mean that it is acceptable that there are now. But I would hasten to say very, very rapidly, very right on the heels of that, is that we are not in the early 1900s. We're not in the 60s. We're not in the 80s. We're not even in the 90s anymore. We're living in an age when our government can literally declare you a terrorist and throw you in jail and keep you indefinitely, suspending your constitutional rights. They can tap your wire, your phone lines without a warrant. The Patriot Act is an unbelievably vicious piece of legislation that eviscerates the Bill of Rights. We have been in 20-year war with a terrorist group, and we still don't even know exactly what happened on 9/11. We are living in days of far too powerful government overreach with almost no protection given from our local government. I think that's one of the things that really bothers me. And I think maybe I speak for all of us when I say this. I get, and we'll come, here's the line we walk. Is this real? Let's assume for a moment that it is exactly what they say that it is. That we are going to suffer the same to our medical infrastructure as China did to theirs. That we are going to suffer the same rate of death in our streets and cities like China did in its filthy, feces-filled streets in the Wuhan province. Let's say that those things are all true. Even still, there seems to be no one that raises their voice and says, wait a second, is there a different way to do this? Is there at all any way to somehow hold intact our freedom of religion and freedom of assembly and freedom of human rights? Is this such a deadly bubonic plague that we must all bow down and lick the boot of the government and hope that in some way they give to us our orphanage porridge and we can basically survive until they, what, give us our rights back? We are living in days when no local government seems to be standing up going, wait a second, you have a First Amendment right to meet. We are watching, I believe, ladies and gentlemen, a soft run. I'm not even saying that the coronavirus, the COVID-19, is not real. I'm saying it is being used. And at this point, it is irrelevant. Is it an intentional design by the master puppeteers, or is it simply a bunch of bureaucrats that think they know better than you and I? At this point, it's ultimately irrelevant. We have, in the United States of America, going on today, soft run at martial law. Over a virus that does not have sufficient data to warrant it. Tuberculosis, AIDS, the swine flu, something like 50 million people contracted the swine flu. That didn't seem to overwhelm the system. How can 50 million people with the swine flu not overwhelm the system, but this does? Why not take measures to lighten the load? Here's an idea. Why not be honest and say, listen, if you're anywhere between 15 and 50 and you get this, stay at home, self-quarantine, take precautions, do what you would do to take care of yourself as a flu. If you feel symptoms worsening, you may contact your local physician. If you're 50 and over, here's a couple things you need to do. And if you have underlying conditions, here's what you need to do. Why not that? I'm not a doctor. I'm not a virologist. I'm not a biologist. But where is the common sense? Why are we not approaching this in a different way? I think it's very, very fascinating when we think about it. And if we're honest, and this is probably going to smack some of you guys in the eye, but I think it's very honest that some of the greatest overreaches are by some of our greatest, quote-unquote, Republican and conservative superheroes. It was Ronald Reagan, I believe, who passed some sweeping language about the Brady Bill and our weapons, our guns. It was Bush, the first one, who was, well, I'll leave the whole Kennedy assassination thing alone, but it was Bush who was the first one who introduced the New World Order. It was Bush the second one who introduced the Patriot Act and got us into two world wars, one in Afghanistan and one in Iraq, and God knows where else we're going to war because of that. And now it is Trump that feels the need to give everybody money back. If Obama was doing what Trump was doing right now, and hear me well, and this may cost me Soul Trap listeners, and it may make you mad, but I'm sorry. If President Obama was doing what Trump is doing right now, we would be livid. We would be so angry. How dare he not defend our rights? How dare he make a mountain out of a molehill? And who is he to give us $1,000 back? It's not the government giving us our money. It's our It's our money in the first place. California lockdown, New Jersey lockdown, Illinois lockdown, Ohio lockdown. And we sit here quaking in fear over a little over 200 people that have died, as if our nation is to be brought to its knees. And then there is the response of the churches. I realize that we are all scared, but it seems to me that there are two things that are missing in our thinking, our thought process, in the churches. And the first is the idea that there has to be an absolute absence of any danger for us to be able to go to church. Well, how do they do that in Syria where they may be crucified? Or how do they do that in Saudi Arabia where they may be hung? How have we dumbed that down through the ages where men and women might have been burned at the stake? Listen, if the elderly want to stay home, fine. Let every man be fully persuaded in his own mind. But can you honestly tell me, can you and I honestly ever look at our congregation in the faces again and preach such messages as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Preach such messages as Daniel? If there were bodies in the streets, tens of thousands of people dying, over 200 people, more people died of drunk driving last year than have died of COVID-19, and our churches are empty. They are empty. And the government has given us no relief, no assurances, no guidelines. Maybe it lasts 2 weeks. Maybe it lasts 3 months. Maybe it lasts 18 months. We don't know. Well, I find that to be absolutely unacceptable. Unacceptable. The government does not have the authority to use fear to strip away an inalienable right. I would even be willing if they were to work and say, would you break it down to 50 or 100? But what is shocking to me is not the response of the government, but it is the response of a Christianity that has gone to bed with a government. Mind you, a government, conservative, that still has done diddly squat about abortion, that has done nothing about the rampage of sodomy and homosexuality, that has done nothing to support or truly help Christianity in the United States of America. And yet, at the first sign, we close our doors. I have a friend of mine who lives in Fresno, California, a pastor. He was sent by the city an order. And have you noticed that all these things are orders? It's not laws, it's orders. And they're very careful to say that. And in this city order, on one side of the column, and I'll be glad to send you the picture if you want it. On one side of the column is a list of businesses and facilities that may stay open. On the other, non-essential. On the one side of stay open, essential was a dry cleaner, other things like that. You know, hospitals, okay, yada, yada, yada. On the other side, there was a long list, and in the alphabetical order, it went casino, churches, clothing stores. It made me want to grab my phone and throw it across the room when I saw that picture. How dare our government, the city of Fresno, how dare they list a church or a house of worship between a casino and a clothing store? The rights they have and the freedoms they have and the country they live in and the blessings that they have and the free air that they breathe was given to them by the God that we worship. It was given to them by men and women who believed what we believe as Bible believers. Our forefathers were the ones that stood up to the rampage of European Catholicism. Our forefathers were the one that put their lives on the line in the Revolutionary War. Our forefathers were the ones who wrote a constitution that assured the rights of the people. And they have the audacity, the unmitigated gall to list a church between a clothing store and a casino. And across the nation, for fear of a virus, pastors say, "Government, thy will be done." Francis Schaeffer was way ahead of this. In the collected works of Francis Schaeffer, I have in volume 5, The Complete Works, The Christian View of the West, there is a tremendous statement I want to read. Schaeffer states, "Third, as we look back to the time of slavery and the time of the Industrial Revolution, we are thankful for Christians such as Elizabeth Fry, Lord Shaftesbury, William Wilberforce, and John Wesley, who spoke out and acted publicly against slavery and against the non-compassionate use of accumulated wealth. I wonder if Christians of the future will be thankful that in our day we spoke out and acted against abuses in the areas of race and the non-compassionate use of wealth, yet simultaneously and equally balanced this in speaking out and acting also against the special sickness and threat of our age, the rise of authoritarian government. That is, we will resist authoritarian government in all its forms, regardless of the label it carries and regardless of its origin. Will we do that? The danger in regard to the rise of authoritarian government is that Christians will be still as long as their own religious activities, evangelisms, and lifestyles are not disturbed." Oh, you can still have your church. You can still have church, just got to do it online. That is not church, ladies and gentlemen. It has never been a historic position of church. It never will be a historic position of church. It is not a biblical position of church. Mark it down. Churches are closing. They are not having church. The threat of this virus, and maybe you believe that it is a legitimate threat. I'm going to meet you halfway on that. But let's not kid ourselves about what we're doing here. Maybe you do believe it is a legitimate threat, but you have to believe that it's legitimate enough to disobey Scripture, or at least to mitigate the Scripture. That's what you're saying. This threat is so awesome, so awe-inspiring, so overpowering that we must set aside the commands of the New Testament church to meet. Not to meet with less than 100, not to meet less than 50, but to meet less than 10. You can't even get 3 families in a home like that. So what you're saying is, "I believe this threat is so powerful, I must set aside the command of meeting together." That is authoritarian government. And it is a soft sell from our government that says, nobody's telling you can't preach the gospel. Nobody's telling you can't do that. You just can't meet together. Oh, okay, so you're just telling me I can't obey the Bible. That's what you're telling me, sir. Now, Francis Schaeffer makes a statement again. He says, "Please read most thoughtfully what I'm going to say in the next sentence." Now listen very closely to Francis Schaeffer. "If there is no final place for civil disobedience, then the government has been made autonomous. And as such, it has been put in the place of the living God." If there is no final place for civil disobedience, then the government has been made autonomous. And as such, it has been put in the place of the living God. Look it. I just got a note. I just got a YouTube video from the NCLL update, David Gibbs. It's amazing to me how we're turning to lawyers rather than the Word of God to determine what steps we should take. I listened to the video. I have the video here in front of me on YouTube, and it is roughly 10 minutes, 33 seconds. And in 10 minutes and 33 seconds, the great legal leader of our Christian movement could not manage to quote or reference one Bible verse. Not one. He told you what the law said. He told you what the government was saying. He told you what was practical, what was pragmatic, what was safe. He told you how to make sure that your optics look good in the community. But not one time did this biblical novice, regardless of the degrees that he has in law, not one time did he open his Bible and say, "This is what the Word of God says." I said at the beginning that most of the time visionaries are a pain in the butt. All we need is the trash to get taken, man. Sweep the floor, vacuum, do your job. But every once in a while, visionaries are good because they see the sudden change in the traffic pattern. They see the brake lights through the window of the car ahead. They see what is coming. Do you see what is coming? Do you see? One of the greatest fears I have is for our church. I don't want anybody to get sick. God knows I don't. I don't want anyone to get sick. It would break my heart if someone got COVID-19 in our church. And I know that in the end, there will be many that will think I'm making a mountain out of a molehill. But ladies and gentlemen, we're not thinking this through. We are allowing churches to be lumped in with businesses. We're not restaurants and bars. And our government owes, yea, our government has a responsibility. Our government has a sacred trust to defend the very institutions of religion that have been the bedrock of this country. And for them to offer us no relief, for them to offer us no even meeting us halfway exemption, for them to have no more concern or care than to lump us between a casino and a clothing store. I say to you, if we stand for this, we will fall tomorrow. God is bigger than the virus today. It has shown the flab of our Christians. It has shown it. Around the world, there are believers that go to church and risk not a flu, not the optics of a community. They risk their lives. Would you be faithful to Jesus if your child were being threatened? Would a lady be faithful to Jesus if her husband was crucified before her? Are we better than the Russian Christians, the Czechoslovakian Christians, the Ukrainian Christians, the Chinese Christians, the Cambodian Christians under the Khmer Rouge, the Vietnamese Christians under North Korea? We fret and worry. Nobody wants to get sick. Nobody does. But where does God fit into this? How is it that God made no arrangement in 2,000 years for the threat of a virus? How could that be? On one hand, I'm very happy. You go, yeah, you sound it, preacher. Well, on one hand, I am. Because it assures me that we are getting closer and closer. And it assures me that we are indeed in the Laodicean age. And it assures me that the constant threats of martial law that we have been talking about at the Soul Trap, they are irreducibly and unescapably true. But on the other hand, I'm very sad. And I wonder what our old-time men of God would have done. Do you see the principle? The principle is, even if we close down of our own free will, the government and the society and the culture and even our own Christians have placed us between a casino and a clothing store. and we're happy to be there.